You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll check out a midnight basketball league in Milwaukee that focuses on life skills on and off the court. First, Republican lawmakers are gearing up for some last-minute legislative changes before Governor-elect Tony Evers is sworn in January. GOP state senators met yesterday to talk about priorities for a lame-duck session that could start as early as next week. The list includes a tax incentive package for paper products company Kimberly-Clark, moving the date of the 2020 presidential primary day in Wisconsin, and certain changes to state voter ID laws. Laurel White is WPR State Capitol reporter. Laurel, welcome back.
Thanks, Rob. Good to be here.
Well, let's start with this Kimberly-Clark thing, this incentive package to try to keep some of these jobs here in the state. The question all along has been, can they get the votes in the Senate? People who want this, what's the latest?
So we heard from Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald yesterday that they still don't have the votes. And he was talking yesterday not just about Republican votes, which is primarily what they've been focused on up to this point, but also Democratic votes, which I think is kind of an interesting shift in the dialogue about this bill in the Senate. They have been talking previously about, you know, getting enough Republican support for the bill to pass it just within that caucus. But yesterday he told reporters in Madison, you know, we're reaching out actively to Democrats to get enough votes there to pass it, which is kind of a shift. And he said that there are only about 10 or 11 Republicans that support the bill right now. So they would need several Democrats to come on board if they're going to pass it.
Are we hearing anything from Democratic leadership in the Senate?
We are. And that's an interesting sort of dynamic there, because what we heard from the leader of Senate Democrats yesterday, Jennifer Schilling, is that she doesn't feel like Republicans are making a genuine effort to compromise with Democrats to sort of build a bipartisan consensus about the bill. So Republicans are saying they're trying to work with Democrats, and the leader of the Senate Democrats is saying, no, not really.
And the deal is, the Assembly passed a thing. They're hoping, Republicans who support this, they're hoping to pass exactly the same thing so they don't have to kick it back to the Assembly. So there's not a lot of wiggle room there, right?
There really isn't, because the Assembly has said that they won't take it up again, that what they passed is what they passed. And Governor Scott Walker says he doesn't want to make any substantial vetoes to the bill that comes to his desk, which is sometimes kind of a way around going back and forth between the two chambers. So they're definitely in a difficult position in terms of negotiating and getting more people to come on board, because the package itself doesn't look like it's going to change very much.
All right, that's one lame duck story. Now, this potential change to 2020 presidential primary, the date of that here in Wisconsin, what's going on?
So this is kind of wonky. Right now, the 2020 presidential primary is scheduled for the same day as the state Supreme Court race, or a state Supreme Court race. Justice Daniel Kelly, who was appointed by Governor Scott Walker, is up for re-election, his first election, because he was appointed on that election day. And Republicans are talking about separating that state Supreme Court race onto a different election day. So essentially separating those two elections. And Democrats are pushing back on that and saying that the motivation for Republicans to do so is because they believe that presidential primary turnout, particularly for Democrats, will hurt Justice Kelly's re-election prospects.
And Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald talked about that a little bit yesterday. Here he is.
There's many people that think that Justice Kelly would have a better chance if there's not really this competitive Democrat primary for president. That's the concern, I think. But I got to be honest with you. I mean, I think the campaign would be just as concerned that would be a criticism used against Kelly in the end. So
what are people making of that?
So I think it's interesting to note that, you know, Fitzgerald is talking there about some of the, you know, concerns or a little bit of that debate in terms of, you know, what that dialogue was like in the Senate when he talked to Senate Republicans. We got feedback from Assembly Republicans last night from Speaker Robin Voss. WisPolitics reported this, and apparently it's the prospects for that particular measure are looking good in the Assembly. Speaker Voss told WisPolitics that there seems like there's a good amount of support for that there. So we might be set up for another kind of interesting back and forth between Assembly Republicans and Senate Republicans in terms of, are both bodies on board with a piece of legislation enough to get it to move forward?
And Laurel, in our last minute, some changes being proposed on state voter ID laws. What would happen, or what could happen?
So what could happen there is basically codifying some rules that surround voter ID in Wisconsin. It would make those things, which are currently administrative rules, into laws. And the reason that they would want to do that is to not change anything necessarily. It's just to make it more difficult for Governor-elect Evers to make any changes to those rules once he takes office.
So if that happened, then if someone in the future wanted to change the voter ID laws, they would need a new bill in the legislature, presumably, and that's not going to happen as long as Republicans control the legislature.
Exactly. It's basically a way to safeguard the state's voter ID law to make it more difficult to change it in the future.
And when would this lame duck session start, technically?
Well, it's going to be sometime before January 7th, because that's when the new legislature and the new governor are sworn in. So the clock is ticking.
We'll leave it there. Laurel, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Laurel White, state capitol reporter for WPR. She's with us to talk about possible tax incentives for Kimberly Clark and the to-do list for Republican lawmakers in a lame duck session that could come as early as next week. Coming up, we hear about a Milwaukee basketball league that's also connecting its players with employment opportunities and mentorship. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up in the midst of holiday shopping season, we'll get some advice on how to keep our spending in check without sacrificing the spirit of the season. And we'll look at some personal finance moves to consider making and to consider avoiding in the final weeks of 2018. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a bionic donkey.
There's a miniature donkey in Fond du Lac who underwent a groundbreaking operation this year. Ferguson was the first large animal to receive a prosthetic leg from the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. WPR's Jenny Peek went to check in on Ferguson and his caretaker to see how he's recovering.
Come on, Fergie.
Come on.
Come on, love.
Gets a little noisy around here.
Noise aside, Angela Langoski of Holy Land Donkey Haven has been in the business of rescuing donkeys since 2011. To date, she's given shelter to about 90 donkeys, young and old, standard-sized, and miniature. 2 years ago, a miniature donkey named Ferguson came into her care. His front foot was severely deformed, so Langoski enlisted the help of the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine.
His feet were horrible. You know, I knew it came to a point to where it was going to have to be amputated. They took some more x-rays. They agreed that there was nothing more we could do. We lucked out with Ferguson. The university was awesome with us. He spent 2 months there. They only charged us half of what they normally charge because they were really giving us a break. Plus, his operation was such a groundbreaking operation that they wanted to see the outcome. We have, like I say, the right people that wanted to help. And you see him walking around, and he's even gotten to the point to where he runs. It's just when you see something like that, it's like, you know what? It's worth it. I call it being selfish myself, the satisfaction that I get, the feeling I get, but it's worth it.
Since his operation, Langoski has noticed a major change in Ferguson's attitude. She says now that he's not in pain, he's gotten braver and spends more time socializing with the other donkeys at Holy Land, like his best friend Grayson.
But since he's no longer in pain, he could get around, he could make his own decisions, especially with going in and out. Yeah, even when we first put Grayson in with him, he let Grayson know he was in charge. This was his area. You go by my rules. And Grayson is so sweet and accommodating. There was no issues, you know. It was like, hey, whatever you say, man, I'm with it, you know, that type of thing. But I do notice a big, big difference. They even noticed it at the university. When we brought him back last week, they couldn't believe the whole changes in his demeanor.
Success stories like Ferguson's are one of the many things that keep Langoski going. Over the years, she's also gotten used to taking orders from her donkeys.
They're smart. They're smarter than we are. You know, really, seriously. And that's bad when your animals are smarter than you. But I accept it. You know, what the heck? You know, I mean, really, who's in charge, me or them? I'm cleaning up after them, and I'm feeding them. So I think they're in charge, you know, but that's okay. I don't mind having them for my boss.
It's that spirit that always keeps the doors of Holy Land open.
We don't turn any donkey away. Like I say, this is what we're here for. They eat before I eat. They go to the vet before I go to the doctor, because that's what we're here for. We're here to take care of them.
That story about Ferguson the donkey comes from Jenny Peek. She's a digital news editor at Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of WPR and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Now, playing sports can be a positive way to release some extra energy. But for some young people in Milwaukee, playing basketball on the Midnight League is about more than the game. Let's take a listen to what a few of the players say about it.
It provides a safe haven or like just a stress-free environment for however long you're on the court, just to let go of whatever's weighing down on your shoulders.
I actually thought it was a good thing. You know, they had referee training. And they was telling us about the referee jobs. They were telling us about We Energies. They had a lot of programs and a lot of ways you can get better jobs and better opportunities to make it. Growing up in Milwaukee was kind of tough, actually. If you can see, like, on the news and stuff, you know, it's a lot of violence going on in Milwaukee. And basketball actually kept me out of trouble.
Mark Briggs is the recreation supervisor for Milwaukee Public Schools. He played in the Midnight League in the 90s when it was called In the Paint Midnight League. Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us about the league. It's basketball, but it sounds like it's a lot more than basketball, too.
Oh, definitely. The Midnight Sports League with NPS Cares and the Milwaukee Police Department is a very powerful thing going on in the city. We brought it back. We started February of 2017, March 2017, and we've been going strong since. So we're trying to get the young men, 17 and 25-year-olds, more resources, more community resources, more connected to community agencies that might be able to help them along the way of, you know, closing the gap with employment, if they're having child support issues, if they're having legal issues, job training, job programs to you know, get them started on to a better start with their young adult lives.
We'll dig into that a little more. I understand, though, you played in a similar league in Milwaukee back in the 90s. What did you get out of that experience?
Oh, it was real competitive. The league really started early 90s with former players, college players from the area, a few pros sprinkled in there. It was more basketball-based then, so we would really go at it, you know, because we were always looking for the good run where the best players would play. And in the paint was where they were. So I jumped in slightly after my professional career overseas, got back home looking for guys, you know, to continue to stay in shape. And in the paint, Midnight League was a part of that. That was from 97 to 2001. So it was very competitive, a lot of great players, local guys. The Bucks were heavily committed to the process and program. We still had services and whatnot if the guys needed information about jobs or school and that kind of thing. But it was more basketball-based at that time.
And when you were restarting this, you wanted to do something a little different.
Yes, they definitely, Milwaukee Police Department, Running Rebels, NPS Cares, our leadership here at Milwaukee Public Schools, wanted to tap into that age group of 17 and 25 and try to do more than just, you know, open the gym and roll the balls out. We wanted to get more community people involved, offer the guys opportunities during that that age group to help them connect to the services and programs that's available in the community, because a lot of the information is held in silos, you know, so a lot of young people don't know where to go to get information for school, to get information about job training and programs. So we've thought that basketball, of course, would bring them to the table, but the services part would keep them there and keep them engaged in what's going on in Milwaukee.
So talk about how this might have worked on a night in your most recent season. What, they play a game and then they sit down for a little seminar or something?
Yeah, what we do is that we bring the team. We open the doors at around 7:30 at night. We have games at 8, 9, 10, and 11. So at whatever scheduled time you're to have your game, you have an enrichment session before the game. So you have to check in with attendance, go to the sessions prior to your game, get the information and whatnot, ask to have a Q&A after each session, and then go right into your game. So we kind of channeled it that way because we didn't want to have a situation where guys were just coming for the basketball piece and then leaving the gym and not getting the enrichment piece. So we kind of flipped it so as you have to be in an enrichment session to play in the game. So it's kind of hand in hand. The guys have bought in. They bought into the program, so it's not a lot of kicking and screaming. They know what's expected. It's a mandatory piece, and they actually have taken a great advantage of the opportunities.
And sometimes employers will come by and talk about opportunities. Is that right?
Yes, we've had we have job fairs there. We've had a smorgasbord of ideas of where we bring in community agencies. This past season, we brought in the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative. We also brought in Milwaukee Health Department to try to tackle some of those pieces, and they've taken on enrichment and partnered up, and they reach out to the organizations to bring them onto the table. So we have a familiar organization with the Fatherhood Initiative and Milwaukee Health Department staff, but then we partner out, make phone calls, and bring in the extra services based off the registration sheets and based off of what the young men say they might need more information on.
Talking to Mark Briggs, recreation supervisor for Milwaukee Public Schools, looking at Milwaukee's Midnight League basketball, providing on-the-court skills and off-the-court life skills, too, for players. And, Mark, let's talk a little more about the non-job life skills. I understand there's some mentorship that goes on as part of this.
Yes, what we're trying to do is form those relationships. You know what I mean? We have Delmar Williams, who works with the Milwaukee Police Department. He's been coaching his own team for the last few sessions. So we're trying to make sure the guys know if there's something they want to talk about, you know, a little bit off the record. They've been forming these relationships with coaches, staff at the Midnight League, myself as one of the supervisors, Matt Goodwin, one of the supervisors, also with our building directors, Rodney Jones, who's a local guy. So trying to make sure the guys know that they have a ear if they want to talk about things. And that's what's been happening. We got a high retention rate from the guys from each previous session. Guys, they're coming back. I got a lot of these young guys in my Facebook friends now. So we're really forming that bond with the young men and letting them know, like, hey, we're here to help. You know, we play basketball and we're offering these services. But if you want to talk about anything, you know, we've probably been there and done that. So we're trying to, you know, make sure that they feel comfortable with that.
You wrapped up one of these sessions just a little while back. Do things go on even when the basketball games aren't going on? Is there contact through the rest of the year?
Oh, yes. What we've also done is we have three sessions each year. There's a spring session that goes from March to early May, mid-May. Then we pick it back up, take a couple weeks off, pick it back up in June. We go from June to August, mid-August, take a couple weeks off. And then we go September to mid-November. So what we've done is we've partnered with one of our brother programs in NPS Recreation, the Muni League, which has been around for years. So what we've done is we've taken the top championship teams from the Midnight Basketball League, and then we put them in the Muni League with another, and that's more of an adult league for the older guys that still play. So that's about another 30 to 40 guys that we put into the Muni League, which starts in January and bridges right to our Midnight League. So we're trying to keep these guys engaged, you know, throughout what we would call off season. So we're trying to keep them engaged, keep our phone lines open, you know what I mean, keep lines of communication open so they know, like, hey, we're not just, you know, dumping you, leaving you for 6 months. If you got anything going on, you need extra help or you need contacts or some of the services that we offer during the 30 weeks that we have the Midnight Sports League, then we're still here over the winter months. So we're doing a lot more behind the scenes as far as closing that gap from December to March. There'll be some more things we're trying to get done. So that'll be coming down the pipe here pretty soon.
I'll talk sports for just a minute here. You just said these 17 to 25-year-olds go into the Muni League with the guys, the older guys. How do those older guys stack up against the kids?
Oh, it's pretty competitive. You know, these guys, these young guys still have some hoop dreams. They still got that engine going, the fire burning. And so these older guys, the older guys, they play hard. And it's kind of a mentorship. We try to let them know, like, hey, you know, don't beat the young guys up too bad. And we also tell the young guys, hey, don't run them into the ground too bad either. So it's kind of a bridging the gap of generations. That's what we try to use it as.
Can you talk a little more about how you partner with, you mentioned some of the community organizations, police departments, recreational centers, with Midnight Basketball and beyond? Talk about the partnerships you're building here to work with people 17 to 25, and I imagine other ages too.
Yeah, so what we've done is partner with Milwaukee Safe and Sound, Milwaukee Police Department, Milwaukee Police and Fire Commission, the Running Rebels were at the table. City of Milwaukee, we have Alderman Khalif Rainey, who was big on the beginning of getting everything formulated. So we have a round table of different people and different organizations to help us formulate what does that enrichment piece look like? What do we want the league to look like? And what do we want the participants to get and take away from this? What do we have extra for the families that are coming to support these young men? So these are all conversations that we have had and continue to have to make sure that, you know, of course, the basketball piece is going to take care of itself. But what are we doing to make sure these young people have something to take home, to buy into, to latch into, and to take advantage of? And like I said, recently, this past fall session, we've added the Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative group with Natasha Dotson being the lead on there. And we also had the Milwaukee Health Department there with Tony Higgins over at the Milwaukee Health Department to, again, bridge these gaps, offer more resources, get more into depth as to what can these young men take home other than a win or a loss at the end of the night. So it's been a great partnership, and we'll keep, you know, adding and subtracting as we move forward.
And, Mark, before we let you go, when does the next basketball session start?
The Muni League is going to start in January. We're still formulating that. But the Midnight Sports League Basketball League is going to start beginning of March. And, again, we'll go to mid-May with that spring session. So 2019, March, we'll get that going.
Mark, thanks a lot for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to talking to you guys soon.
That's Mark Briggs, Recreation Supervisor for Milwaukee Public Schools. He joined us for a look at the Midnight Basketball program in the city. Coming up, we'll get some tips on keeping our holiday spending in check and some year-end money do's and don'ts along the way. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 6 on The Morning Show, P is for pterodactyl. Meet the author of the worst alphabet book ever. That's their words, not mine. That's tomorrow morning at 6:15 here on the Ideas Network. Now, the National Retail Federation says consumers will spend an average of $1,000 during the upcoming holiday season. That's up from nearly $970 last year. Most of that we're talking about will be on gifts. And our guest says a lot of that spending is often wasteful, draining our cash reserves and leaving us worse off by the time New Year's rolls around. She's here with some advice on how to keep our pocketbooks in good financial shape, and she'll share some money moves to consider making and avoiding in the final weeks of 2018. Holly Johnson is a freelance writer who focuses on personal finance and travel. She's the author of Zero Down Your Debt, Reclaim Your Income, and Build a Life You'll Love. Her website is clubthrifty.com. Holly, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, why do you say a lot of our holiday spending is kind of wasted spending?
It's not always wasted spending, but I think we can admit that a lot of us want to make a special holiday season for our families and maybe spend money that we can't afford.
Right. What leads us down the path to overspending, say, especially when it comes to gifts?
Well, I think that sales, like Black Friday, can lead us to buy things that we don't really need or didn't plan for. Trying to impress people. There are always those, you know, holiday gift exchanges in the office, or maybe your family plans a couple every year. I think it's a lot of things. I think it's more than one thing that leads us to spend more than we plan and then to regret it after the new year.
Yeah, you've written about the holiday gift exchanges. What are some changes we can make to our gift exchange programs that make sure we're not all spending too much money in them and that people are getting, you know, something decent out of it?
Well, when it comes to gift exchanges, I kind of take a hard line against them because I think so many people plan them without thinking about how it affects other people's finances, like people in their family. I know when my husband and I first got married, we had a point where across both of our families, we were in, you know, five or six different gift exchanges where everybody brought a $10 gift. But the thing is, we didn't have any money. So our whole Christmas budget was like $200, and we were spending 60 of it on $10 anonymous gifts for a gift exchange. And I know one point early in our marriage, I told all our family that I wouldn't do gift exchanges anymore, and that ended that. And, you know, sometimes people don't like that. But some you really do have to do what's best for you and your family. You can't have other people dictating how you spend your money. So sometimes you have to decide that it's not a good time for you and it's not a good time for your budget.
Well, and also it's part of the meaning of the gift giving, too. How many people look back 8 years later and cherish that $10 anonymous gift exchange gift
they got? Right, exactly. I know one year we got jumper cables. That was one of the gifts
practical.
We got. I was like, what does this even mean? So I think, you know, if you can eliminate that kind of wasteful Christmas spending, you can have more money for meaningful gifts that really matter to people.
So how can we plan, and maybe we're a little bit late on this because we've already been through Black Friday and Cyber Monday, but how can we come up with a rational plan to ration our holiday spending in a smart but still meaningful way?
I think it really helps to have a list of gifts that you're going to buy for the year, to write out everybody that you're going to buy for and have a cap on how much you're going to spend on them. I think that's smart because then you can eliminate some people for starters because, you know, your Aunt Sharon that you haven't seen for 5 years, maybe she's not going to make the cut this year because money's tight or whatever. I think if you don't do that, you end up buying for one uncle and then you realize, oh, I got to buy for the other ones or I might hurt their feelings. Or you might end up spending more on someone than you realize and then having to spend more on another person in a similar place in your family to make up for that. So I think it helps to have a plan and to stick with it. Obviously, it's a little late in the season for that this year when it comes to Black Friday, but it's still not too late to sit down and take stock of the gifts you bought, how much you spent, and put some caps on how much you're going to spend on other people.
Talking to Holly Johnson, a personal finance writer, author of the book Zero Down Your Debt. We're talking about some year-end money advice, some related to the holidays and some ways to take a look at the big picture of our money. We'll get into that in just a bit. First, Holly, a related note to the holiday shopping, whether for gifts or other stuff. A lot of times you're at the store and, hey, yay, you can save an extra 5 or 10% by getting that new store credit card. How should we consider the impact of having lots of different credit cards on our credit rating? What ends up happening there?
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with having credit cards, but are you going to pay off your balance when the bill comes in the mail? I think that's the biggest question. The average credit card APR is over 17% right now. Store cards can be even higher. So if you're going to carry a balance on the credit card to buy that gift, but then you're going to spend 6 months to pay it off, whatever discount you're getting up front might be more than made up for in the interest you're paying. So I would probably not take out credit cards to buy holiday gifts. I think it's generally a bad idea.
And then for your more normal credit cards, I've heard some people think, oh, if I have, you know, instead of just one credit card, if I have 2, 3, 4 credit cards, that looks good on my credit report. Myth, facts, a little bit in between.
Well, the number one factor that determines your FICO score is your payment history. So whether you have one credit card or 10 credit cards, how are you paying your bill? If you're paying it early or on time, then you're going to do great in that category. The second most important factor that makes up your FICO score is the amount of money you owe. So if you have really low balances or you're debt-free, your credit's going to be fine as well. So the number of credit cards you have doesn't play a huge role in your credit score. I've had, you know, up to a lot of credit cards at a time because I write about credit cards in the scope of travel. And my credit score has been over 800 for the last 7 or 8 years. I don't think it matters how many cards you have. It's how you treat your credit.
And then let's take this to the wider issue now. You've written a piece actually about year-end sort of money management, money moves to make. And step one, you say, is to use this time at the end of the year to kind of do a little diagnosis, an analysis of our money situation. What kind of things should we be looking at?
I would figure out, it might be a difficult time to do it right now, but I would figure out how much debt you have and in 2019 create a real plan to pay it off. because debt is such a drag on our personal finances. It's a drag on everything we do. The money we pay towards interest and the money we pay in those monthly payments kills us, and really it kills our dreams, because then we don't have the money to afford the things that we want to do. So that's one of the biggest things I would do, is take stock of the debt I have, quit making monthly payments or the minimum payment and not really worrying about it. Make 2019 the year where you sit down and create a plan to pay it off.
That plan sounds like the key word, because it's easy on New Year's Day to say, okay, I'm going to resolve to bring down my debt this year. But how can we, operationalize that? How can we come up with a plan to start at least chipping away at that debt?
Well, it's not hard. It's a matter of figuring out how much you owe and how much you can afford to pay each month. It's the figuring out how much you can afford to pay each month people have a problem with, because a lot of people have no idea where their money goes every month. I mean, how many people do you know who go to work all week, get their paycheck, spend it, and almost have no idea where they spent their money? So in my personal opinion, I think it's beneficial for everybody to have a monthly budget that they use that outlines their regular bills and then estimated spending amounts on everything that they spend on. And having a monthly budget where you're keeping track of what you're spending can help you eliminate all the crazy last-minute miscellaneous things that you've been buying that you may not even realize. And once you have a monthly budget, you can also figure out, hey, I have an extra $500 this month. I'm going to pay that towards my debt up front instead of waiting till the end of the month to just see if I have anything left. I mean, it's really about being intentional.
For people who have never tried that before, never done that monthly budget, give us some 101. What are basic ways that, you know, on paper or an app or a computer program, whatever, that people can get started making that budget a reality?
Well, the very first thing you need to do is track your spending from the last couple months. And thanks to, you know, the fact most people use like debit cards or whatever instead of cash, that's pretty easy. Get out your bank statements and your credit card statements and tally up everything that you've spent, and put them in categories that make sense for you. For example, groceries, dining out, utilities, entertainment, transportation, clothes. Figure out how much you're spending on all of those things. I think people are really shocked when they figure out that, you know, maybe they have two $400 car payments, and they don't realize that they bring home $400 or $4,000 a month, and those car payments are taking up $800 of that, almost 25% of their take-home pay. I hear that all the time. Or maybe you eat out a little bit and you try to eat out affordably, but you don't realize you're spending $800 on restaurants every month, and that's, you know, 25% of your take-home pay. I think you have to be real with yourself, and being real with yourself involves sitting down and seeing where your money is going, and only you can do that.
We're talking about how to save and spend wisely over the holidays and evaluate our money at year end with Holly Johnson. She is a personal finance writer, author of the book Zero Down Your Debt, Reclaim Your Income, and Build a Life You'll Love. We're talking about some money moves she says we should make in these last few weeks of the year and some we should avoid. We'll hear some more of those coming up. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have trouble keeping your holiday spending in check? What are some things you've done to keep your expenditures down? And what kind of things do you do at the end of the year, kind of a financial tune-up? And what kind of financial advice do you have for other listeners, maybe people just entering into the world of careers and debt? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about year-end money moves and enjoying the holidays without breaking the bank. Holly Johnson is our guest. She's a writer who focuses on personal finance and travel. She's the author of Zero Down Your Debt. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have advice, suggestions on how you keep holiday spending from getting out of hand? Any tips or tricks you use to keep that those costs down? Do you have questions about, you know, what to do for a year-end checkup, about how to set up a budget, or have you set up a budget yourself? How'd you do it? Did it make a difference for you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Holly, before we go to our callers, you have shared online some of your year-end advice. One of them, one piece of advice is at your employer, see if you have a 401k plan and make sure you are enrolled in it. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's pretty clear based on recent studies that a lot of people aren't going to have the money they need for retirement. And I think it's really easy to pass the buck every year and just think, oh, I'm going to deal with it next year or the next year. But from experience, I know that like your 30s creep up on you, and then your 40s creep up on you, and then your 50s creep up on you. And if you don't do something about it, you're not going to have the money to retire ever. Maybe you'll have to work until you die. So if you work for someone else that offers a retirement account, the end of the year or really any time is a great time to go see your human resources manager and get signed up for your company 401k plan. And you might be able even to get a company match, free money for doing so.
Let's go to our callers now. Kate is with us in Sun Prairie. Kate, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. So what my husband and I do around the holidays is that we, first of all, see whether or not there's going to be any sort of holiday bonus at the end of the year that we can allocate towards gifts. But what we kind of do is set a budget each year, and then we look at all the people that we need to buy gifts for and kind of think of all the things that they have told us that they kind of hinted at might want. And so some year, you know, mom might get a bigger gift and some year dad might get a bigger gift, but we make sure that we kind of stay within that specific range that we set each year and don't go above that. And if we do, we decide to kind of take from the gifts that we, my husband and I, intended to buy for ourselves.
Kate, thanks a lot for calling and sharing that. That's that kind of planning you were talking about, holiday, as opposed to, okay, here's our list of people we need gifts for. Let's hit the stores or the internet and figure out what we're going to get them.
Yeah, sounds very reasonable to me.
Mm-hmm. Kate, thanks a lot for sharing that story. Barbara is with us now in Appleton. Barbara, hi.
Hi. What I've done is I opened up a separate checking account that I put money in every month. And then at the end of the year, I have all the money I need or that I'm going to spend to buy gifts and such.
Oh,
and yeah, and also my husband and I never exchange gifts. We just, you know, look around and say, hey, do we need anything? You know, and we buy it and say, here, happy Christmas.
I love it. Barbara, thanks a lot for sharing that. And Holly, that idea of, you know, it's not that hard within a bank or credit union often to say, okay, I would like, you know, a separate checking account or something like that. Whether we're talking about gifts or that home improvement, what do you think of that as a strategy for saving for a specific purpose?
I think that's so smart, especially now that it's the end of the year. It's the perfect time to start saving for next year's Christmas, whether that's, you know, $50 a month or $100 a month. And there are some savings accounts that will reward you, like, for that. I know that CIT Bank offers, like, 2.25% APY if you deposit at least $100 a month. So that would be a great savings account you can open online to start saving for next year's Christmas gifts.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Our next caller is Jelaine in West Allis. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, what do you
do? I just wanted to say that once a year, maybe twice a year, depending on my budget or how things go, I usually evaluate my savings, and I'll take whatever's left, like February, March, and I will cut it in half and put half of it into a CD.
Okay, and then you get that little interest payout. I got to ask, Jolaine, do you have a lot of credit card debt or anything like that, or are you mostly debt-free so you can save some of that?
I am completely debt-free except for my mortgage.
All right, Jelaine, thanks so much for sharing that. And Holly, sometimes I've heard from people in the past, like, okay, I've got some money. Should I put it into savings and get a little interest and have it, you know, on standby or pay down that debt? How do we weigh those alternatives?
I think it's such a good idea to put it in a high-interest savings account or a CD. Your listeners are very smart.
They are. Now, nowadays, high interest means something that different than maybe it did, I don't know, 15 years ago. There's not super high-paying CDs out there right now, right?
I know. There's not. And even, like, the highest online savings accounts pay, like I said, the CIT Bank Savings Builder is 2.25. Or you might be able to get a little bit more than that with Ally Bank or something like that. But it's not really high. Better than nothing, though.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to personal finance writer Holly Johnson, author of the book Zero Down Your Debt. She's offering some year-end advice on money, whether we're talking about spending gifts for the holidays or kind of making our plan for the new year. You can join in with your suggestions or questions at 800-642-1234. Before we go back to our callers, Holly, you say this is a good time to review our flexible spending accounts, see if we can get into those, and our health savings accounts, talking about what we should be looking at there.
Well, particularly with health savings accounts, with healthcare costs the way they are, it's really important to save for healthcare expenses. And health savings accounts let you save money in a tax-deductible way, and then your money grows tax-free, and then you can use it for qualified healthcare expenses. And in 2019, families can contribute up to $7,000 to a health savings account, and individuals can contribute up to $3,500, and then you can let that money grow and use it for healthcare expenses if you have a high deductible health plan. So that's a plan that I have for my family, and I think it's a really good idea if you have a health plan that qualifies.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's a good time of year to sit down if you're at a place of employment with an HR person or a benefits person to sit down with them, make that appointment, and consider the options, whether we're talking about 401ks or flexible spending or whatever.
Exactly. And same thing if you have a flexible spending account that you have to use it or lose it. You know, the end of the year is a great time to see what you need to buy.
And now we just came off of Giving Tuesday yesterday, and another tip you have is this is the time to make sure we get our charitable gifts out there. Why is that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to give to charity if that's something that you feel passionate about. The end of the year is a great time to maximize charitable giving. Obviously, I'm not an accountant, but there are tax benefits that you can get for maximizing charitable giving. So I would definitely sit down with them and figure out what you need to do. And then also, as you plan your 2019 budget, it's a good time to figure out how much you want to save to give to charities.
Let's go back to our callers now. Felicia is with us in Pewaukee. Felicia, hi there.
Hi. So what I normally do, and I don't know what anybody else would, but anytime I use my debit card or if I have to put gas in or I go to groceries, I always get cash back, and I always do the max is $20. So at the end of the day, if I go to a grocery store or whatever, I get like $80. I put it in a jar, I tuck it away, and at the end of the week, I have like maybe $800. And then every week, it just keeps building up. And that's great for vacations, Christmas, and like even paying off a lot of like health bills.
Wow. So you've got the jar. You put it in the bank at some point?
I should.
Okay.
But I don't trust the bank as much.
All right, Felicia, thanks a lot for sharing that. I'm glad that's working out for you. Maybe the jar or under the mattress method, I don't know, Holly, is it a good plan?
I think it's better than not saving, for sure. I mean, if that's what it takes you to stay motivated, to save money, and you're using that money in a way that helps you, then why not? I definitely think a bank account is safer and you can earn interest, but...
All right, Felicia, thanks a lot for sharing your story. Holly, in our last couple minutes, I want to pull back a big picture. I think some people, and we've heard this from people in the past, some people are overwhelmed. They don't know how to start. They feel like everything's out of their control. Give a little pep talk maybe for people in that situation to take that first step maybe with that budget you were talking about.
Well, I hate to rehash it, but a monthly budget and spending plan is so important. I think people think of it as something that is restrictive, that is going to prevent you from getting the things that you want in life. But if you can get your spending and debt under control, you can actually have the things that you want in life, whether that's, you know, having less stress, having the money to go on a family vacation this year, having the money to buy something new for your home or remodel your kitchen or something. Having a budget and spending plan that you use every month can help you have the life you want, even if it means not getting exactly what you want all the time. A lot of times a budget can help you prevent spending that doesn't matter to you, like wasteful spending on things that aren't really important that you just don't really realize that you're doing. So I guess my pep talk for the new year is think about how you want your life to be, because the life that you want may be within reach with the money that you earn if you could just use your money more wisely than you're using it now.
It's a good place to leave it. Holly, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Holly Johnson is a freelance writer who focuses on personal finance and travel. She's the author of the book Zero Down Your Debt, Reclaim Your Income, and Build a Life You'll Love. Her website, you can see more of her advice, by the way, for the end of the year, is at clubthrifty.com. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, schools and foster homes are being challenged as the opioid crisis leaves more kids without parents in the home. We'll find out why those systems are overwhelmed and how they're dealing with it. That and a lot more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.